All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton. This is the divisional round edition of the show, and unfortunately it comes without participation by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, as this is also the first free stretch of what is now the Bucs offseason. They lose on Sunday night to the Commanders 23-20 on a walk-off field goal. You know by now, I'm waiting. It's Friday by the time I'm recording this. Usually I record on Wednesday or Thursday. And, I mean, I didn't go out of my way to wait another day. But in a way, I needed to, because the way you feel after a game like that, especially a playoff game that ends your season, you need a few days to kind of get the proper measure of it. And you want to kind of let it marinate a little bit so you don't say anything knee-jerky, or maybe just say stuff you don't really actually believe, but you say it in the moment. So we've had some time now. It's been almost 5 days as I record here on Friday. And I'm sorry I didn't get the show out a day earlier. But I'm not over it, man. I got to be honest with you guys. And maybe seeing the next round of games pass and you know, once we get to the conference championships, and maybe the realization will come that the Bucs probably weren't good enough to make a real deep run this year anyway. But, you know, it's not the NHL playoffs where you have to win 4 7-game series, or even baseball now has got another round, and it's all these different series. You know, in football, you win a game, you win one game in the playoffs, and you're elite. I always say that. Divisional round weekend, and the last 2 weekends are both two of the best weekends of the year, but divisional round weekend, like, that's the true measure of what kind of a team you had and what kind of a season you had. If you're playing on that weekend, there's 8 teams, okay? And there's 32 total. You're in the top quarter of the league. It means you've either won a playoff game, or you were so good that you didn't have to play your first playoff game and you had the first round bye like the top seeds do. But either way, like, you can fake your way. I don't want to say fake your way, but there are still pretenders in the wild card round. There are still teams that aren't that great, especially now with the expanded playoff and the added 7th team. You can be a team like the Steelers, who I don't think anybody thought was really that good, who lost their final 5 games, including the playoff game, didn't even have a lead at any point in the final month of the season. You can be a team like that. You know, you can be a team that just kind of snuck in or backed in or whatever you want to call it. But if you're playing on divisional round weekend, you can't be. You either have to have won a playoff game or, like I said, had a bye. And either way, this is where the creme de la creme of the National Football League starts. And you know what? The Bucs were certainly, obviously, good enough to do that. And as I sit here on this Friday morning recording the show, like I said, 5 days removed from all this, and I was there on Sunday night, the one nagging thought still keeps eating at me, and it is, I can't believe they did that. I just can't believe they did that way. I can't believe they went out like that. I can't believe they let that happen. And I don't mean losing the game. I wouldn't have lost sleep for 4 minutes if they had just simply lost the game because they lost the game. And that happens all the time. You're not going to win every game. Everybody's good in the playoffs. The Commanders are a good team. You know, after they got beat by the Lions in the divisional round last year, of course, we were all bummed. You know, that's a game that maybe they could have won with a couple more breaks, but it also wasn't, you didn't lose sleep like, oh, God. You know, they lost. Hey, they keep winnowing it down, right? It starts at 14 teams in the playoffs, and it gets down to 8, then 4, then 2, then 1. You know, eventually everybody except for one is going to lose. And I wasn't that bummed. This is different. This is different. Because this isn't simply losing the game. They waited until the most critical, pivotal, and quite simply, essential part of their season. Your whole season rides on this. And they made two of the worst plays I've seen them make all year. And that really bothers me, because if anything, you just want to go out playing. Obviously, you want to go out playing your best football, and if you still go out, okay. But even if you don't play your best football, you don't want to go out being at your worst. And the end-around jet sweep fumble, I mean, I even as I sit here 5 days later, I literally can't believe they did that. And then the 3rd and 1 with the snap, oh my God. I mean, it's not even like the Commander. It'd be one thing, you know, the other guy's getting paid too. They have contracts. They're professional football players just like everybody else. And I say it all the time. Sometimes, you know, you jump and the other guy jumps a little bit higher. Or sometimes you dive for it, and the other guy hits you a little bit before you get there. Or sometimes you throw the pass, and the other guy knocks it down. Whatever. Shit happens, okay? Everybody's good. It's tough. But the Commanders didn't even do anything. And so all the blame that there is to go around, and I know there was like kind of some bickering on Twitter this past week. Oh, this loss is on the defense. They couldn't get off the field. No, this loss is on the offense. Honestly, and I'll get into it here on the show coming up, it's both, okay? The offense only had 7 possessions. That's not enough. The defense, while they didn't get lit up on the scoreboard, definitely, obviously, did not get off the field enough and let the Commanders control too much of the clock and possess the ball. But you know what else happened? On the most important fourth down stop of the year, with the Buccaneers already holding a 17-13 lead and the Commanders going forward on fourth down, which they did 5 times on Sunday night, and this time it's fourth and goal from the 3, and it's all on the line right here. The Bucs defense got the stop, okay? They did it. They did the hardest thing that we wanted to do. You know, not just get the 3 and out and get off the field on third down. No, you got to do it again on fourth down, and they did it, okay? And when they did it, then the Bucs offense hit a couple passes. Mike Evans gets the first down. I mean, he had a great game overall, obviously, but that the one first down where he was like right at the stick when he caught it, then he's got himself wrapped up by the legs, reaches forward with his arm, gets the first down. And we got the ball. We got a first down. Now we're out of the shadow of our own goalpost. And we know right there, if you go down there and score a touchdown, you're going to win the football game, period. It was going to be 24-13. And even if you don't score a touchdown, if you can move the ball a little bit, and even if you punt it way down the field, and then the Commanders, they at least have to drive the whole length of the field, and they have to score a touchdown instead of a field goal, and you would have given yourself a chance. So what do the Bucs do? They put the football on the ground without anybody from the Commanders touching them, and the defense that just made one of the biggest stops of the entire season, in a season where one of the biggest criticisms of them was that they couldn't get off the field, they just did it in the biggest moment of the year, and 3 plays later, we put their ass back on the field again. With Josh Hayes playing corner, and they still got the stop, and said, no, do that all over again. And they even got it to fourth down again after that before they gave up a fourth and goal touchdown. I mean, I could bang my head against the wall and punch myself in the nuts in perpetuity if I keep thinking about it. And, you know, all the guys that played a role in that are guys who I want back and I want in my foxhole anytime. I love what this offense did this year. I love Bake. I don't even know whose fault. You know, they went after the game. Todd Bowles said, oh, well, maybe, you know, Graham Barton snapped at the wrong time. Mayfield, of course, because he's an honorable guy, stepped up and said, no, it was my fault. Whoever fault it was, I love every one of them, okay? I mean, it sounds, I'm mad, I'm hurt as a fan. That's why I sound this way. But every one of those guys, I appreciate what they did this whole season, and I want them back to do it again next season. I just, like I said, I guess it comes back to that one thought. I just literally can't believe they did that. I can't believe they did that. But even then, there was a chance, okay? They scored, the Commanders scored. Now it's 20-17 them instead of 17-13 us. Okay, that sucks, but now our offense gets it back again. Now they drive the length of the field, and they're inside the 15-yard line or wherever they were. I think they were inside the 15, yeah. And it's first down, and Bucky makes a nice carry, picks up 9 yards. Looks like he could have just gotten another yard, but again, it's first down. Why worry about it? Instead of just falling forward for the first down, he tried to make a cut back and see if he can get a lot more. And that's what you should be doing, because on first down, you're not thinking, oh my God, I have to get this first down. Second and one is fine. It's second and one. We're going to get the first down. We're going to score, and we're going to go up 24-20, and we're still going to win despite that horrible fumble. So on second and one, they try a little quarterback like sneak thing, like a fake. They faked it to Bucky, and then Bake tried to follow him through the hole, and it didn't work out. But it's third and inches. Literally inches now. It's not third and a full one. It's third and inches. And this is another one, and this is where I hate when you do it to yourself instead of the other guy doing it. And the Bucs did it to themselves. Graham Barton, and I'm not ripping him, just bear with me for a second. Graham Barton snaps the ball when Bake wasn't calling for it. Nobody on the offensive line moves. Mayfield's surprised by it. Bucky's not going to take the handoff. Nothing, because it wasn't supposed to be snapped then. And on third and inches, which should be the easiest thing in the world to get, they lose 3 or 2 yards, 2.5 yards. And now not only do they not get it, but it's not even fourth and inches, it's fourth and three. And they still should have gone for this. We'll talk about that coming up too. But instead, they kick the field goal to tie it and effectively say, here you go, Commanders. You got 5 minutes in the ball. Go downfield and beat us, bleed it all away. And we're just going to sit here and watch. And that's exactly what happened. Now, let's go back to that sequence, because the game was still on the line right here. Second and one, it wasn't a great play, but whatever. It didn't work. Fine. Third and inches. And Dan Orlovsky, whatever you think about him, did a nice breakdown of this on his Twitter feed, which I retweeted. If you go to my Twitter feed, at Bobby Game Day, it's BobbyGameDay, at Bobby Game Day. It's like a few days old now, but I reposted it up there. He did a little breakdown, and he showed how the Bucks were in this complicated sequence of dummy calls and changing the cadence, trying to get the Commanders to jump offside to pick up the automatic first down, where, you know, Baker's going, he's doing all this, that. Then there's a kill call, and he's like, okay, and he scratches it off, then he goes into another dummy count. Incredibly, incredibly complex, needlessly clunky language, all for third and inches. Like, I get trying to get the other guy to jump offside on third and four, or fourth and three, where you're not really intending to go for it, but maybe you think you can make him. But it's third and inches. Inches. Just snap the ball. I'm not going to play the video here because it wouldn't translate without being able to see it. The audio wouldn't be enough. But go to my Twitter feed. Give me a follow if you want to. But even if you don't want to, just go see my post there. And Dan Orlovsky details the whole thing. It's a great breakdown by him. And you can see exactly what happened and why it happened with Barton missnapping the ball. But why? Why make it so complicated? Like, on third and inches, just snap it and surge forward and get the inches. And even if you don't get it, you can do it again on fourth down. Like, you've literally got three chances, starting at second and one, to just mash it straight forward without any complexity or any confusion or leaving the door open to anybody making a mental mistake, and you're going to get the first down in one of those three plays. And the Bucs ham-handed it. And so, yeah, Barton is to blame specifically on that snap thing, but I blame the Bucks. And even though Liam Cohen, again, love everything he's done, and I know he's interviewing for other jobs, but I blame him a little bit too, because there was no reason it had to be that way. Just go get the 5-6 inches and be done with it. And to Barton's credit, he had a phenomenal rookie year. After the game, he stood up in front of his locker, and he absolutely, with his eyes straight forward, looked every single media person that asked him a question straight in the eye. And even when he was offered an out, he didn't take it. Like, somebody said, oh, well, you know, it looked like the defense there kind of jumped offside a little bit. You just snapped it because you wanted to get the offside call. And he said, no, I wish that was the reason, but it wasn't. He said, it was my fault. I snapped it at the wrong time. And that's a dude right there, okay? And I have immense, not that he would have had to do that for me to respect him, but I have immense respect for him. And he was straight up, straight forward with the media, didn't run away from it at all. And I'm not even mad at it. I mean, like I said, that's a mistake, but like I don't know why they were even trying to do that is what I'm frustrated at. So anyway, I mean, nobody on the Bucks did anything but be a stand-up guy after that game. And they know it as well as any of us. I mean, you know, it's got to be incredibly, you know, painful for them. I mean, this isn't life or death. You know, they all have great lives and, you know, make a lot of money and all that stuff. But it's got to be incredibly painful for them to know that they got that far and they lost for the reasons they lost for. Because you can always live with losing if it's for good reasons, but it wasn't for good reasons. So anyway, it turned into fourth and three. Now, here is where the Bucks could have gone for it and probably should have gone for it. The numbers bear out that they should have gone for it. I'm going to back off on this one, though. I mean, I thought it best, like Joe said on the website, if you go to... a million articles back by now, but it was kind of a coin flip. I know, you know, they had just lost yardage on two consecutive plays and they weren't happy with the way things were looking. And obviously, you know, you want to live or die with your better unit on the field. So if you kick the field goal, you're handing the game over to your defense, and wouldn't you rather have it in the offense's hands? And yes, I mean, there's a very good case for them going for it. Even if they don't get it there, they've got the chance to get the ball back and have another chance to score or kick a field goal. But I'm not going to crucify Todd Bowles, even though I usually am very, very it's a big pet peeve when coaches mismanage fourth down decisions and too often kick when they shouldn't. I didn't think that was one that was a brutally bad call, and I could see it going either way. I mean, if he had gone for it, I would have liked it, but I'm not going to crucify him for not going for it. They really, just really, really, really shouldn't have screwed up what they screwed up to get to that point twice. So for all the things that happened in that game, and it was frustrating, it's not like the – I mean, listen, everybody's talking about Jaden Daniels, and he's phenomenal. Really like him, and he played a great game. But did anybody that watched that game Sunday night, did Jaden Daniels do anything that made you go, oh my God, this guy, what about, like, not at all, right? The main thing he did, I mean, he made a few plays, but the main thing he did was not make the mistake the Bucs did. He just never made that mistake. He's hard to sack, so I give him that. That was the biggest thing. You know, even when we got some pressure on him, he was able to stand in there and either make a good throw or just literally get out of there with his legs, which he did several times. On the opening series, the pass he hit to McLaurin, which I think may have hit the ground, but anyway, you know, had a blitz coming, didn't get picked up, right in his face. He delivered a great football, and the Commanders got a field goal out of that drive. Of course, the final drive on the final play before the field goal, or second to final play before the field goal, it looked like the Bucs and Kancey had a chance to get him in the backfield where they could have used their final timeout because it would have been fourth down. Instead, he eluded the grasp, got away, got the first down, and the Bucs bled it all the way down. That's another thing that people are criticizing Bowles' timeout usage on the final drive. I didn't have a problem with any of that, and it only would have mattered if the Bucs could have stopped them from getting the first down, but they couldn't. So none of that mattered. And if Kancey does hold on for that wrap-up and he drops Daniels in the backfield, we call our last timeout right then, and then they're kicking that go-ahead field goal instead of a game-winning field goal with about 40 seconds left, which wouldn't have been great for the Bucs. They may have still very well have lost the game, but they would have had 40 seconds at least to try with a guy like McLaughlin who's got a cannon. And so I don't think he used his timeouts the wrong way. Coach, I know, listen, this is another thing we need to talk about, okay? Todd Bowles this, Todd Bowles this, Todd Bowles that. Our fan base, and I mean, Twitter's not real life, you know, maybe in the conversations we all have in real life with our friends, it's not this bad, and maybe I'm on Twitter too much, and Blue Sky. But Todd Bowles, Todd Bowles, Todd Bowles, Todd Bowles. We have an unhealthy obsession with Todd Bowles. He's not getting fired, first of all, whether you want him to or not. But second of all, you're wrong if you want him to get fired, okay? He is not the reason the Bucs didn't win that game, and he's not the reason... I mean, first of all, I don't know what the reason for any bad. There is no bad thing. The Bucs have won the division. I know it's a mediocre division, but they've won the division four freaking years in a row. And the fifth year they didn't, there was a Super Bowl that he was the defensive coordinator for. Okay? Let's talk about this team on defense. Because it's frustrating as hell. I know it and you know it. All right? And Todd Bowles is a defensive coach. Why isn't the defense better? First of all, in three of the past 5 years, they've had a highly rated defense. But for this season, okay? Look at the situation the Bucs defense was in personnel-wise for most of the year. I think, first of all, Jenna Lane put this tweet out. Let me see if I can find it. I saved it. Hold on 1 minute here while I look it back up. Because this blew my mind. Okay, yeah, here it is. Jenna Lane covers the Bucs for ESPN, by the way. She writes, "No one in Tampa will offer up injuries as an excuse, but it's pretty remarkable that the Bucs starting secondary, original starting secondary, okay, the two corners, the two safeties, Jamel Dean, Zion McCollum, Tyke Smith, Antoine Winfield Jr., and Jordan Whitehead, if you want to take five guys, that group in 2024 played not even two complete games together, and the Bucs still won 10 games. It was week one and week six, and even those two games, they weren't entire games together because McCollum left week one in game, and Jamel Dean in week six with a hamstring injury, and McCollum in week one left in the first quarter against the Commanders, the original Commanders game. So from that point on, this entire season, never mind Servasia Dennis, who's a huge linebacker in coverage, what the Bucs were working with in the passing game defensively, I mean, I know I make fun of Josh Hayes a lot, and I shouldn't. First of all, I don't like calling out players who are trying, but second of all, Josh Hayes is a backup, you know, reserve corner who is an excellent special teamer. He's led the team in special teams tackles, and that's mainly his job, okay? He's not supposed to be out there one-on-one with Terry McLaurin. He's not. And so when the Bucs are forced to do that because Jamel Dean got hurt for the 458th millionth time, because Jamel Dean can't seem to run from point A to point B without getting hurt, and they have to keep doing that. I mean, the Jamel Dean injury was brutal, because that changed a lot of things in that game. And he'd been playing a pretty good game up to that point, as he usually does. But I mean, all season long, it's been one after another after another after another. You want to know why the Bucs run that bullshit soft zone coverage that we all hate so much? It's because they have to. This year especially. At what point in a game? Oh, I forgot about Bryce Hall, who didn't even make it to the regular season. He was supposed to be the other corner, and he got hurt. But I mean, why do they run that defense, that soft zone? It's so frustrating, right? I mean, how many times all year and up to and including Sunday night would it be third down and 5 or third down and 7, and you're thinking, all right, here we go. And guy runs down the field, sticks a foot in the ground, cuts into some in-breaking route. Nobody's even anywhere near him. And they just throw him the ball for the first down, uncontested. Happened all year long. Why do you think they run that defense? They don't have corners available, at least, on a weekly basis, who can actually cover somebody, man, that much. And they have to do it that way. And so do I have criticisms of Todd Bowles? Of course. I mean, he's not George Halas or Vince Lombardi, but he's far, far, far from some bumbling fool who's costing the Bucs winnable games with his decision-making at all, okay? It's actually pretty damn good to have gone 10-7 this year and won the division, considering, and you can say what you want about the quality of the division, but 10-7's a good record considering what they went through and the schedule they had to play earlier in the season. And when they finally had things lighten up, they went 6-1 down the stretch, took control, and won the damn thing. And they should have won the playoff game, too. And they lost it for reasons that Todd Bowles didn't fumble the ball in the damn jet sweep, and he didn't mess up the snap count on third down. Maybe, although it may have been Cohen, maybe he's to blame that they were trying to get in the jump, because that's part of the issue. And John Romano wrote a really good column about this in the Tampa Bay Times, about Bucs fans not really... I'm not saying you have to, like, worship at the altar of Todd Bowles, or we have to have a Todd Bowles Appreciation Day, but at the very least, I think it's very over the top the way people complain about him. And he goes on to say, or hang on, I'll quote some of Romano's piece, tier two, actually. He talked, well, I don't have it in front of me, whatever. to honor the late, great Bob Uecker, who passed away the other day, Christ, I can't find it, the hell with it. But you know what I'm saying, all right? I mean, Todd Bowles has been the architect of a defense that's been good most of the time, and in my opinion, injuries were the biggest reason it wasn't as good as we wanted it to be this year. I remember that Detroit Lions game, and we're still here talking about the Lions as the number one seed. They're going to host the Commanders instead of us playing the Eagles. But that Lions team didn't, like, that wasn't some fluky win by the Bucs, like, oh my God, like some weird bounce or something. The Bucs took it to them that day when they were healthy and went out there and beat that ass on defense, and they won the game 20-16. And injuries ended up mounting up, and it made a big difference all year long. And I mean, I'm not trying to make any excuses. I'm not saying it's the only thing, but I really believe that was a huge factor this entire year. I believe it was a huge factor on Sunday night. And so, hey, listen, it wasn't the only reason. Like I said, the offense bears a lot of the brunt of it, because the defense, for all we want to complain, held them to 23 points, and really it was 16 points, because one of the touchdowns they scored after we had just stopped them on fourth and goal had to do it all over again. So, hey, there's blame to go all around. And we don't need to talk about it anymore. I need to do this one show where we get it out, because it's just so disappointing to lose in that manner. But I think the Bucs are in a pretty good place. I know people are saying, well, we have to keep Liam Cohen at all costs. If we need to, we should fire Todd Bowles and hire him immediately as head coach, because otherwise he's going to leave, and maybe he will. He's only got one interview, and he did the interview with the Jags, and they may hire him. Hell, I mean, all it takes is one, okay? But even if they do, firing Todd Bowles, to me, is not the right move for this team. It'd be a knee-jerk panic move, and there's a whole trail of those, not just in Bucs past, but in league history, of people thinking some offensive guy was the hot shot. It's another thing Romano wrote about in his column, you know? Josh McDaniels, he named a bunch of them, you know, that people, oh, we got to keep this guy's the hot young offensive mind. We got to do whatever it takes, you know? Dirk Cutter, we wanted continuity there. And Dirk Cutter wasn't terrible, but I mean, the Bucs weren't, you know. My point is not to criticize them. I mean, my point is, there's a long list of guys who everybody's like, whatever we do, we got to make sure we maintain this. We have to keep this guy. And then the guy didn't even end up being that big of a deal. And meanwhile, Todd Bowles has done it, okay? Like, he has done it. And in a way that listen, Lavonte David, ask Lavonte David. He said it the other day. He's like, all y'all complain about Todd Bowles should listen to us a little bit. It'd be one thing if we thought he was losing the locker room, or it'd be one thing if there was strife, or it'd be one thing if there were whisperers about dissatisfaction and players getting pissed off and not wanting to play for him, this, that, and the other. Absolutely none of that, okay? A completely unified front. The team plays its ass. Whatever you think of the Bucks, I think they're playing their ass off. I think they played their ass off this year. And, you know, that matters. There's something to be said for that. So if it was me, and it's not, but I think that's what they're going to do anyway. If it was me, you know, I'd try to make it as sweet as a deal for Liam Cohen as possible to stay in his current position. That'll give us another year. Todd Bowles is the head coach, and we'll see how it goes in 2025. If he gets the Jags gut job, of course, he's going to take it, and he should, and that's fine. Oh, well. You know, that's part of the deal when you're successful. Your coordinators get hired. But I think there's a good chance that the Jags go a different direction, and they don't jump all in the deep end with a guy who has a small sample size, albeit a very successful sample size, but a small sample size, much the way the Panthers did with Dave Canales. You know, I don't think that's necessarily that likely to happen. It could, and if it does, again, good for him. But I'd stand pat. I think this Bucs team is in a good spot. I mean, they're one of the younger teams in the league. Assuming, you know, we get back to being normal with injuries and not have our defense especially get completely injury ravaged. I mean, look at what they got offensively. Really love what we got with Bucky Irving. Mike Evans should be back. I think Mike Evans, I mean, I'm hoping, maybe this is wishful thinking, but I think Mike Evans with that hamstring thing in the middle of the year, maybe the extra rest helped him because he looked away in the second half of the year, and I know some of it was against lesser competition, but not all of it. But he looked better than I've seen him look in years. Like, he looked like his old self, and so hopefully he's still got plenty left in the tank to have another good, and obviously he's going to be motivated in 2025 because he wants that record all to himself to have another 1,000-yard season. Chris Godwin, I talked about it when it happened back in the middle of the season with the injury. Not that any injury is a good injury, but if he had, like, shredded all the ligaments in his knee again, like another knee injury, I'd be like, uh-oh, like, I don't know, he'll never be back to what he was, even if he tries to come back. The dislocated ankle is different, though. Like, that's something that I think you heal from, and I don't think he'll be any worse for the wear. It wasn't the knee again, you know? So there's reason to be optimistic about that. I know he's a free agent, but I think the Bucs bring him back, no-brainer. Jalen McMillan, in the meantime, really stepped up in the second half of the year, and it was exciting to see what he can do. So I think the Bucs have a really, really good offensive line situation, and we'll see if they re-sign Bredesen, but everywhere else they're good to go. Really good receiver situation, really good running back situation, really good quarterback situation. There's no reason, especially if Liam Cohen is back and we have a really good offensive coordinator situation too, not to be excited about that offense. And then defensively, Zion McCollum's been a revelation. I think as far as the draft, and we got tons of time to talk about the draft, obviously pass rush is a big glaring need. But at the same time, going back to what I just said a few minutes ago, I don't think it's automatic that they pick pass rush right out of the gate because a good lockdown corner could really do wonders for this defense. Really do. And plus, like I said, Bryce Hall, he'll be back. You know, he's not hurt if they're going to do that again. But you can shore things up at corner. Servasia Dennis should be not hurt next year, coming off his torn pec. We'll see what Lavonte does. And then, yeah, they need pass rush. Pass rush and corner. Like, you want to talk about a team that's really not far off. I know everybody thinks, oh, well, if we just get this person or that person. But most teams aren't one or two players away. But I really think the Bucs are one or two players away from at least being good enough to get, I don't know about win the Super Bowl, but at least be good enough to be playing on divisional round weekend again like they did last year and maybe even further than that. They're absolutely, you know, probably good enough right now, but certainly good enough when people that are already here get healthy, and certainly if they can add a couple pieces, whether it's the draft or free agency. And with the cap, they've got some space. They could probably get a little more with some things they can do. I'm excited about 2025, and not in the way that every optimistic person always says they're excited about the upcoming season the minute the previous season ends. I mean, really legitimately, if you look at the Bucs roster, there are reasons to be excited here. So as disappointing as that was, and it was disappointing on Sunday, and as disappointing as it is going to be this weekend when I sit down and watch the game on Saturday night, with the Rams at the Eagles, or on Sunday, that's the game. On Saturday, it's the Lions. But my point is, it'll be hard to watch because I know the Bucs probably should be playing in one of those two games. But I also don't have that feeling like I posted on my Twitter that the 2021 divisional game against the Rams where the Bucs got down 27-3 and came back to tie it, then lost. That was so hard to swallow because that Bucs team could have won the Super Bowl. I think that Bucs team would have won the Super Bowl if not, well, first of all, that Rams game, you know, they make the comeback and then they end up getting beat on the zero blitz and Winfield gets beat by Kupp. But even besides that, I mean, if the Antonio Bryant thing doesn't happen, Antonio Brown thing doesn't happen in the Meadowlands, Tristan Wirfs got hurt in the first playoff game that year, you know, that team was good enough. I feel like that Rams-Bucks divisional game was the Super Bowl. And that one eats at me even to this day. This one, the Bucks could have won, but I don't think they would have gone to the Super Bowl or anything like that, even if they had. So it doesn't hurt as bad in the long run. And I think 2025, they have a chance to really do something special. We got a whole offseason to talk about it, and we're going to. All the potential draft picks, all the stuff, the free agency, when the schedule comes out, the combine, you know, the NFL always keeps it going. We'll get to all that after the Super Bowl. But in the meantime, on this day and in this week, at least up until the divisional round games get played, my biggest thoughts are just going to be simply, man, I can't believe they did that. And I can't. But if anything, maybe some good will come from it, because I guarantee you, not that you need motivation, anything beyond what the normal motivation is, it's professional sports, but I think it can be a good thing for this team in 2025, the way it all went down on Sunday night, and knowing that they were good enough, knowing that they did it to themselves, and knowing that if they clean stuff like that up, they're going to be really, really hard to beat. And the division, I mean, looking at the division in 2025, it's going to be better. You know what? I love Penix. He's a Tampa kid. I mean, I wish him well, but like, I was kind of hoping he wouldn't be that good. You know, the Falcons made this move. Looks like he's pretty good, though. So like, the Falcons are going to be tough in a way that they weren't just because they got Cousins this past offseason. It looks like Penix might be the real deal, so that's going to be there. Carolina's getting better. Bryce Young looks like he's a lot better. The Saints are the only team in the South, I think you can legitimately say, well, they're going through it right now. And they've had some cap issues, and they continue to have cap issues that they haven't dug out of. And so, yeah, hey, you know what? It works both ways, right? We're filled with regret about that 2021 loss. We're filled with regret about that Sunday night loss to the Commanders when the Bucs could have been better. Let me tell you what, the Saints, 100 million absolutely percent were the team in 2020. And they were beating the Bucs, and they were getting ready to go up 10 points. And then what happened? Antoine Winfield forced the Jared Cook fumble. I just call it the Jared Cook fumble. I'll never forget it. And we got the ball when, like I said, the Saints were going in, and they were inside, what, the 35, and Winfield forced that fumble, whatever it was. Saints score a touchdown there. They win. We're done after one playoff win. Antoine Winfield forces the fumble. We beat them. Drew Brees retires. We pretty much end the Saints' run and go on and win the Super Bowl in a year when I don't think the Bucs really should have won the Super Bowl that year. 2021, they should have won it. 2020, they probably shouldn't have, but they did. So it goes both ways, and the Saints have that to regret. Except they haven't come out of it yet, and they're still in the doldrums, and they're going to continue to be. But besides them, I think the division is going to be, you know, Atlanta and Carolina both are going to be much more competitive. So it'll take more to win it, but I think the Bucs are going to be better too. I'm excited about it. And for now, that's all where we'll leave it. Email me if you want to, bobbygameday@yahoo.com, BobbyGameDay, bobbygameday@yahoo.com. This isn't the end of anything. I'm going to keep doing the shows, but it is the end of the regular season and play, like the Bucs season is now over. So even though I'm not going anywhere and I'm doing my show next week and on beyond that, just like normal, I still want to say, as I do at the end of every season, thanks to all of you, not just for listening to the show, but for the interactions on Twitter, for the emails. This all, like I always say, is entertainment. Nobody's life rides on how good your favorite sports teams do. You don't, the Bucks win the division, or the Bucks win a playoff game, or the Bucks win the Super Bowl. You don't go to work on Monday morning and they say, hey, all right, you're a Bucks fan, right? Well, they just won the NFC South, so that's a 4% pay increase. No, like, your life is your life. You know, you still have to lead your life. Sports teams are just for fun. I always tell my son this, like, don't ever get so wrapped up in it that, oh, I didn't do my homework. You know, you got to take care of your life first. But still, it really is, for me, a part of my life that I deeply enjoy. And I think part of that is because when I was, you know, I love the Lightning and I love the Gators and I love the Rays too. All those things I picked up at some point in my life. You know, we didn't have the Lightning until I was in seventh grade, and the Rays, I was in college, and I didn't enroll in UF until I was older. The Bucks, besides my own family, like my mom and my dad, my grandparents and my aunts and uncle, the only other thing in my life that is literally the same in the year 2025 as it was in the year 1980 freaking one is the Bucks. Like, this is unchanged. And I love that. I mean, I think it's a beautiful thing. As I mean, you have to have that kind of a background to be a legitimate Bucks fan. People have come in, you know, to their fandom in any number of different ways. But it's only fun if you have people to share it with. If I just lock myself in a room and watch the Bucks on my own and didn't do a podcast or didn't talk to my friends or that, it wouldn't be any fun, right? So sharing it with you guys and having a chance to do it in this forum is really cool for me. I want to thank the Joes for giving me the platform, as always. Every season comes, every season goes, and when it does, there's always another one on the horizon. And so I'm already thinking about 2025. The Bucks will pick 19th, by the way, if you're looking ahead to that, because there's like a four-way tie, and they could have picked anywhere from like 18th to 21st, I think. So they land at 19th in the first round. We'll get to all that later on. But it's just been really, really fun. I love the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, always have, and I always will as long as there is a Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and that never changes whether they're 10-7, 7-10, 2-15, Super Bowl champions, or out of the playoffs. It makes no difference. That's what's so beautiful about it. So thanks to all you guys. Thanks to the Joes for giving me the platform. JoeBucksFan.com, the single best place anywhere, TV, internet, radio, for Buccaneers coverage. It's always there for you. I'll be back next week. I'm looking forward to the games. The other sports, when your team gets eliminated, you're kind of like, and you're deflated. You don't want to watch anymore. Football's not like that. As heartbroken as the Bucks game made me last week, I'm still fired up for the four games this weekend because it's football, man. And we only have, hey, seven games left in the NFL plus the college football title game Monday night. We only have eight football games left until August, man. So do not waste any of them. If you're going to Children's Gasparilla, I'll be out there, and maybe I'll see you. Either way, be safe, have fun, enjoy it. I'll talk to you guys next week. And as always, wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks. Stay.